BT, Ronge and Randy, the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, the NFL Combine going on this week. Man, the Combine used to be what it was all about for St. Louis fans because we always had a high draft choice. And it wasn't like we were participating in playoff games or anything, so the draft was our Super Bowl. John Clayton is with us now on 101 ESPN, talking some NFL. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good.
Has anybody sniffed Henry Ruggs 427 yet?
Not yet, no, because we got offensive linemen going today. I mean, you may have one of the biggest linemen doing the fastest 5-2-40, but nobody's been able to take the rug away from Rug.
And yesterday, speaking of that 40, we heard about Albert O, Akui Bunim from Missouri, the tight end who ran a 4.49, which is a really, really good time. How much does that raise his stock now?
I haven't been able to estimate it yet because, I mean, this hasn't been considered to be a real good tight end class, but it has to raise it significantly because, there's the thought, unless New England takes a tight end at the toward the bottom of the first round, that it may not be anything going until the second round. But you have to think that the way this is, particularly in a tight end-oriented league, it's got to help. Now, obviously, if you're going to be doing a 4.49 40 as a tight end, there's a good chance you may not be a great blocker. That's not as big of a deal because what teams are looking for is tight ends who can get downfield, catch the ball, get there in zone. So I have to sort it out this weekend to see where it goes. But probably, other than maybe Justin Herbert yesterday, Rugg, although I think he was all set to go to Denver at the very worst in the first round, I think he probably helped himself as much as anybody.
John, you've been covering the NFL for a long time, been at plenty of combines. How much, in your estimation, has the combine changed over the years? I mean, do teams still hold it in the same regard as they have before, or are they using it differently?
They're using it differently, and you can see the subtle changes even this year. Now, again, my first one was 1990, and there was only 9 reporters that covered it, 9. And we were in the Holiday Inn. We're actually by the elevators. There was nothing other than we couldn't get into the dome to be able to watch any of the things. And so all we had to do to get the times was get on regular phones and try to get somebody to call us back. And so that was a little bit different. We didn't have cell phones back then. But then now over the years, I mean, everything's now moved into a convention center. Over 1,000 credentials are given out. And, of course, what's different even now for teams is that they're finding now with social media, with interviews and things like that, they probably don't need as many people there. Sean McVay, for example, left all his coaches at home, and now even talking to head coaches, and they're wondering, is it worth staying the entire time? Sure, you get the opportunity to spend time with the player and get an idea, but also, if you have better things to do, you have also got the ability to have somebody else ask the same questions that you might ask and then be able to get the responses because you'll be able to see the video. So, yeah, it's changing a lot, and so I think what it comes down to is that technology is making it a little bit easier and a little bit more decision-making as far as who goes and who doesn't go.
John Clayton with us on 101 ESPN, and John, as you know, with collective bargaining agreements, fans ultimately are concerned about being able to see their sport and making sure that there isn't a lockout or a strike, but they also want their quality of product to be good. So with that as our knowledge, because fans don't really care about how owners or players feel about this, how do you think the CBA will be for fans?
Well, if it passes, it'll be great because then there's labor peace for 10 years. There's no out in the deal, and the TV contracts can start to be negotiated, and that's going to be very lucrative for both sides. But if this doesn't pass, then it's going to be 2 years of absolute disaster because I can tell you right now there's going to be a vindictive quality of the owners on a deal that was agreed to by the Players Association. And so now to even dig in and get anywhere close to 40% or 50% of what they got in this deal, and I'm not saying it's a great deal. What I'm saying is the deal is agreed upon and just needs to be voted yes. But if there's going to be no, you're going to see so many bad things happen next year that it may take a while to get football because it's not a matter that, I mean, everybody, so many people who don't follow this stuff the right way say, well, if the players waited, they would have got a better deal. I mean, if you waited, it wasn't going to happen because, number one, you're in an election year. That's going to pull down TV ratings. You're not going to have the networks make total commitments on long term when you don't know if there's going to be football. And so what will end up happening is that the owners are going to come back and put caps on salaries to try to really, get this thing done. So this needs to be voted on, whether it's a good deal or a bad deal. And they basically set it up so the 1,100 players making the minimum get a significant increase. But if it doesn't go, there's probably problems after this year.
John, is there generally this much turmoil with the players? I mean, you're hearing a lot of back and forth, and it feels like it's between the haves and have-nots. You mentioned the 1,100 players making the minimum, but is this a normal thing during CBAs, or is this different?
No, it's different. I mean, but again, you know, because usually, the union represents totally what the players want. Well, in this case, there was a faction of the players, which is understandable, that didn't want 17 games. And you can understand it. I mean, if you're Aaron Rodgers, you're Russell Wilson, you're J.J. Watt, you put your body through a lot for 16, and then you come back and you say, oh, now you want me to play a 17th game? Can't do it. Don't want to do it. Richard Sherman, same way. So what you're looking at is the 272 players making over $6 million a year saying, we don't want to do this. The problem is, if you're one of the 1,100 players making the minimum, you're saying, wait a second, I get a $100,000 increase, I'm going to practice a little bit less, there's going to be less toll in the body, I just have to sacrifice one game, and of course, if I don't vote for this, then I'm probably not going to get any money next year. So the Morris Smith said, hey, democracy is messy, and right now democracy is in there, and the haves don't want to do it, and the have-nots have to decide.
You know, John, I can't believe nobody's talking about this, but where's Tom Brady going to play next season?
Oh, geez. It's amazing to think that, and of course, I mean, everybody's kind of, it was funny because I was supposed to do a column this day or next day on Brady and all that stuff. And everybody's going into the overreaction mode as they can because it's the biggest story in sports right now, or one of the biggest stories. But, you know, first off, you know, they're making a big deal out of, gee, Brady hasn't been talked to by the Patriots for money. Well, they don't know what the cap is yet. They have, because of the talks between the players and the owners, you know, they haven't determined next year's cap. They're working on it this weekend, so they should know it by Monday. But, you know, it's a big deal because is it $200 million, $205 million? So they're making a big deal that they haven't talked to him, so they definitely want him out and he wants out. Well, again, they're letting him hit free agency. So he gets the taste of free agency, but now the question is, does he get the full dinner? So now there's 5 to 6 teams that are going to go meet him on the 16th. And he'll have to start listening to those offers. But right now, the Patriots really can't do anything. And Brady, I think, understands that because you don't know what the cap's going to be yet. And they'll know it in a day or two. But right now, they don't know it.
And, John, even with that being the case, multiple reports out there that Philip Rivers is going to land in Indianapolis. No surprise that there would be discussions between the Colts and Philip Rivers. Are you buying those reports, though?
I am, but, you know, like anything else, you still have to get the deal done and what's the price going to be. And naturally, if you're going to be the Colts, you have to do your due diligence. And, you know, on the 16th of March, you've got to look, unless you can get a deal now with Philip Rivers, you have to look and see and talk to, you know, Tom Brady and see where he is on things. Because, you know, if it doesn't work out with Rivers, then you can work it out maybe with Tom Brady. So, you know, it's still to be played. But to me, it makes the most sense.
Hey, what are the Bucs going to do with Jameis Winston?
They don't know. I mean,
how is that possible?
Well, because, I mean, Bruce Arians said it. And, you know, it's like, and Bruce Arians is about as forceful person saying what he thinks at the moment. And so basically the other day, it's like, I haven't decided yet. And so now he's got knee surgery from meniscus, which shows that he's tough enough to play through that. He had LASIK surgery, but I kind of wondered, did he get the right one? Because it was for nearsightedness, and I noticed his interceptions are more downfield than near. So it's like, did he get the right surgery there? And so he threw 30 interceptions, and of course, Arian said 20 of them were all on Jameis. And then the other day, just boom, they asked him, it's like, hey, is there one quarterback that you might look at? And he said, yeah, Tom Brady. And so they're in on the Tom Brady thing. They're also in on Philip Rivers. So basically, they haven't decided yet.
John, are the Battle Hawks the best XFL team you've ever seen?
No.
Oh, come on.
Like Houston right now.
What are you talking about?
Look, put it this way. All I can tell you is the best two fan bases in the XFL. One's in St. Louis and one's in Seattle. And St. Louis had, you know, again, it's not even close. The best two fan bases for the XFL are in these two cities on the two teams that play tomorrow. And so, you know, selling and selling well. And I think that's great for the sport. And I think it's great for the future of the sport. I think it's great for St. Louis.
And John, we've always looked at this as one of those rivalries where you throw the records out the window. Do you agree? Mm-hmm.
Well, because there's no records, yeah. So you can throw it out the window, but you're not going to break the glass.
You know, everybody who's on our show has really taken to the Battle Hawks, even though you're in Seattle, you're based there now. People here have really rallied behind this team. And when they rally behind them, there's a particular rallying cry, and it goes like this, caw-caw! And everybody we've had on the show has done that for us. Is it possible, John, that you would do the same?
Caw-caw!
Thank
it
you.
Is. Clayton is the best.
Yeah,
he's
the best. I love it.
Thank you, John. Have a great weekend.
I tell you what, I mean, so far, the only game that I've missed of the XFL, you know, I have not gone in person yet. I have Jim Zorn on every Monday on my show at 11 o'clock. But one of the things that the only game that I missed was 2 weeks ago on a Saturday when I had to go pick up food for my wife, and the place that I went didn't have FS1. So that's like the only game that I've missed. But I've watched every game so far, and I've loved it.
See, football people just love football. That's the way it is. John, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Okay, thanks.
Take care. We just got a caw-caw out of John Clayton. Good job, Ron.
Yeah. Well,
Seattle.
Honestly, I think he was dying to do it.
You think so?
You know, he was Lieutenant Colonel Jessup on the stand. He just wanted to say it.
You damn right I did.
Hey, if you haven't noticed, MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred hates baseball. We'll prove it next on 101 ESPN.